Right, hello and welcome to an extra special episode 38 of the Reptile Chat podcast. Why is it extra special, I hear you ask? Well, it's been a whole year since I started the podcast. That's right, today the podcast is today is the podcast's first birthday and I can't even speak. I've been doing it for a year, can't get my words out. Before we get into the episode, we're going to do a bit of admin. So first up is Patreon. Thank you guys. Thank you to the Patreon gang so far. Your support means masses to me and it helps me create all this cool stuff and keeps the podcast taking over as well. If you aren't on the Patreon, let me share a little bit about it with you. First up, it starts from as little as £1 a month. What does this get you exactly? Well, all the tiers are the same. You get the same stuff. The only thing that's slightly different is stickers. You all get access to the stickers, but like the top paying tier gets them earlier than the lower paying tier because I need to better pay for them myself. As well as cool stickers, you get early access vlogs and early access to any pre-recorded podcast episodes. Talking of early access, these are the vlogs that are currently available to the Patreon. So we've got a leopard gecko upgrade and we've also got the tortoise table build. So I built a double decker tortoise table. So yeah, that is the Patreon. Don't worry, if you aren't on Patreon, all the vlogs will eventually make it to YouTube, so there is no paywall, you just guys have to wait a little bit. Also on the Patreon, you get access to the Reptile Squad Discord, where you can chat with me and other Patreon members about all things reptiles and anything else that comes up. And like I said, there's also exclusive stickers on the way too, and there will be merch further down the line. So yeah, link in the show notes if you want to come and join that. Moving on, let's see who is in the comments today. When my laptop catches up. Oh, come on. There we go. So we got hello Jay. Jay's extra. Jay was our earliest today. Hello Gary. Paul is there waiting in the wings. Hello Dendro Dave. I don't know what this is in regards to, but it's always nice to get a little kinky on the screen. Yo Dan. Hello. Mike, I'm sorry if I butchered that. Who we got? I think Fiona, hey Fee, Scales on Earth. Hello, thank you for coming in. Touch, hello, thank you for coming. Hello, Michael, Matt, hello, hello, hello. I'm not even reading the comments, so I hope you guys are behaving. Serenity Dragons, hello, hello, hello. Cool. Thank you guys all for coming along. So today's episode is a little different in structure. Instead of having guests on and sort of doing an interview, we'll be joined by Paul from Paul's Monitors very shortly. There's a few bits and bobs that we're going to go through first, and then we're going to finish the whole episode off with a Q&A as well. So without any further ado, let's please welcome Paul. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, are you? You've frozen on my screen.
That's
you're back.
Good start.
I can hear you completely fine.
Okay, as long as the audio is fine, we'll see what happens with the video. I think it's my internet connection today.
That's fine. Let's just edit that bit out of the live. Hello.
Yeah, hello. Nice. Thank you for coming along. It's nice to see you again.
Yeah, how
are
we?
Right? I'm all right. How are you?
I'm busy.
Good. That's what I'm saying.
Busy.
So, before we get into it properly, it's a new year, and obviously because it's a new year, Paul, there's new podcast questions that you haven't answered before. So, okay. we'll get started with a quick fire questions because they've changed since the last time you were on.
Okay.
So, cats or dogs?
Cats.
Right, that's it. End the podcast.
All right, thank you all for tuning in. This is the most viewers Ben's ever had, but he's just ended it there.
There we go.
Appreciate you all for stopping in. Subscribe.
Snakes or lizards?
Lizards.
Frogs or salamanders?
Salamanders.
Centipedes or millipedes?
Centipedes, possibly my favourite animal on the planet.
Nice. Spiders or scorpions?
Say that one again, sorry.
Spiders or scorpions?
Scorpions.
Nice. Birds or butterflies?
Birds.
Grasslands or woodland?
Woodlands.
Beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Hot climate or cold climate?
If I had to pick, cold.
Nice. And the most important question of the entire podcast is, what is your favourite biscuit?
Viennese, Vianetta, Vianetta with the biscuit on the top and the chocolate on the bottom.
Viennese, the fingers or the whirls. Either way, I know what you mean.
The whirls, yeah. Or nice. Either that or the Nutella biscuits, yeah.
Oh, good choice. Nice. I like those. I haven't had those for ages, actually.
Yeah, they're good, yeah.
They are good. So, there we go. I know you were disappointed that I didn't ask you that last time, but it didn't come up when we were on the last podcast.
It's fine. It's the year of the dragon now, so it's all good.
It's the year of the biscuits. So, nice and quick for those that are listening that might not know you, sort of give us a very short, simple, who are you and what do you keep?
I'm Paul and I keep monitors.
There we go. That was perfect.
I'm Paul. I'm a keeper out of the UK. I sadly am 30 this year, and I've kept reptiles for just over a third of my life, been obsessed with them for all of my life, and I've refined my keeping to mainly the animals I'm incredibly passionate about, which are the varanids.
Nice. I think that sums up nice and easy, and yeah, that's cool. So the first time you were on the podcast, almost a year ago today, way mm-hmm. back then, there were zero captive-born, captive-bred mangrove monitors anywhere in the UK. And now there are three of them, and they are all yours.
They are all mine, yeah.
So first off, congratulations. That's incredible.
Thank you.
And obviously the guys that are following you on Instagram and in your Patreon know a whole lot more. But there's a few people, hopefully a few people, that are listening that maybe are coming from my side and they don't follow you. And so... Could you tell us the story of the journey? So where from Mango, who was obviously mum,
yeah.
How did these three babies appear? Because obviously you don't have a male mangrove monitor either.
No, not an adult one, no.
So what happened?
I think Fee might have to fact check me, but I think it was 2021, early 21. We were living in a tiny, tiny... I was living. I don't think we were living together at the time. I was living in a tiny little flat. And a mangrove monitor popped up on the local buying, selling sites. So pre-loved. And I've always loved mangrove monitors, but I've never seen one for sale since keeping varanids. Yeah. So I went on Google like we all do. And Google was very much like, yeah, 6x2x2 is okay for a female. And this was unsexed and only a couple of years old, so I was like, oh, it won't be that big and blah blah, it'd be fine. I had a 6.2 and I was like, okay. So I messaged the guy, organized it all, drove a couple of hours to go and see her, and he had two, and one was substantially bigger than the other, and pretty cut up and beaten up, so I went for the smaller, nicer looking, but happened to be the more satanic of the two.
Okay.
Which was Mango, and a friend of mine now has the other one, which happened to be a male. So I could have brought a pair, but sadly I didn't have space. But I quickly realised that a 6x2x2 wasn't big enough for a pair of mangrove, for a female mangrove. So I brought a 6.33, which was the biggest I could house in my tiny little flat. She was in the 6.33 for about 2 years, and after a year and a half, she started cycling and laying eggs for me in the 6.33. I think I've got a video on YouTube of finding her first clutch of eggs, which was pretty, like, monumental for me, because getting mangroves to lay eggs is pretty hard as it is.
Yeah.
So I was pretty happy with that, but I wasn't really happy with how I was keeping her. Then we moved here in 2022. So I must have got Mango in 2020 then. But anyway, we moved here in 2022, and then I put her in an 8x3x3, and again, she continued to lay eggs for me in bits and bobs, but I wasn't really satisfied with that. So I built this 4-6-4 and clutch 7. Every clutch that she gave me, there was range between 2 and 5 eggs. And every clutch would have clear slugs that we all expect slugs to be squidgy, squishy, discolored eggs. And every clutch had good eggs. And I knew they were parthenogenic, so I was always incubating them. I was incubating them in sim containers, which are basically suspension chambers. And every single time the eggs would dent, it started to crumple. And I just assumed they were infertile because obviously there was no male to fertilize them. I didn't assume I was doing something wrong, but turns out I was doing something wrong. And on clutch 7, for some strange reason, I decided to bury the egg after it started to dent in the sim container. So after about day 30, it started to dent. So I buried it in vermiculite, eco-earth, and water mix, left it for a month, dug it back up after a month, and sure enough, there was vein networks inside of it at like 60 days old. And I was like, what? I couldn't believe it. And by that point, she'd laid me another clutch, which two of those eggs looked great. So I sat those eggs straight into perlite and they just sort of went to the wayside because I had this one egg in my mind. And I left it. And then like around a day 100, 110, I thought the medium was too dry. So I added some water, which then over hydrated the egg, which caused it to bubble and swirl and get stretch marks and bits and bobs. So I had to like spit it out and dry it out. And then on like day 180 odd, it started to really dent and go brown, like dent from underneath, and which is bad. And I was like, oh my God, it's dead. And it's this. And then day 191, Solly pipped. So yeah, that was the short story. And then fast forward 60, 70 days, 173 days, baby Sol pipped. And then at 181 days, baby squid pipped. And to my knowledge, I've not found anyone yet that's had two parthenogenic mangroves from one clutch. They could be out there, but I've tried to find them and I can't. So I got one from clutch 7, 2 from clutch 8, none from clutch 9, and she's cycling at the minute. So clutch 10 should be on the ground in 25 days.
Which is, it's mad, it's mad. So why the sim containers, from my understanding, what I hear online, I don't know anything about breeding monitors. I've just done the royals and leopard geckos and stuff. Sim containers, I was under with the understanding that they are like the mutt's nuts when it comes to incubating monitor eggs. So do you think there was an issue there with not providing enough humidity, or what was going on there, do you reckon?
I think sim... I've heard a lot of people struggle with tropical species like Audatria. So my Gelanai and my Ackies, I've had 99.9% hatch rate in sim containers and just not touch them. I put the eggs in, not touch them for 120 days. I get babies. A lot of people have to compensate by adding sphagnum moss to almost cause more. It's almost like there's not enough humidity in them, which is strange because they are like 99% humidity. So it's also almost like there's an imbalance of pressure in the container.
Okay.
I don't know the exact reason why they fail, but even for the first time this season, I like them because they can. But yeah, the sims. I incubated. I don't have one here. I incubated the eggs that hatched in an extra large sim, which is the big sim. The small sims was what I was using first. And I didn't suspend them. I sat them in the medium and they hatched the eggs. But suspending them in the small ones, they just failed. They would indent. And an egg indenting basically means there's not enough humidity.
Yeah.
But you can't get more humidity in a sim because they're already at like 99%. So
yeah, you'd just be adding more water, which would make no difference.
Yeah, so... To be the honest answer to the question is I don't know exactly what it is with sim containers and tropical species of varanids. Some people have had success, some people haven't. I think there's also a lot of varying factors in regards to the incubator itself, how many pressure holes you have in it. There's so many variables.
Yeah.
But for me, and what works for me, was an extra large sim container with 50% perlite to 50% water by weight. So argument's sake, 150 grams of perlite, 150 grams of water mixed. And then I didn't touch it for 183 days, 181 days, just left it. Didn't air it, didn't do anything outside of checking on the eggs like every 6 weeks. I didn't, oh, once a month I need to air it or I need to add water. I just left it for
Yeah.
181 days. And at 10 to 20 days before hatch, I add a lot more water into my incubator. So the
Okay.
ambient humidity of my incubator goes up.
Yeah.
But then the container, obviously, because the problem is with eggs, the longer they go, the when an egg starts, it starts taking humidity through its environment and through osmosis. The egg plumps up, hydrates, and then obviously as it goes on, the egg wants to dispel water, and that's why you sometimes see eggs sweating when they're due to hatch because the eggs have too much moisture, so they're panicking and they're trying to release that moisture, and that's why they sweat. So eggs sweating, everyone's like, oh yeah, they're going to hatch. But they are going to hatch, but sweating is a bad sign. You
Yeah.
don't want sweating. So eggs towards the end of incubation want to dispel moisture. And some people add more water into the medium during the incubation. And if you keep adding water, then obviously that egg never has a chance to dissipate that excess moisture. So I just left it be. Kept a stable humidity as regards to my incubator, but in the container itself, the humidity would have been dropping as the medium would have been drying.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Again, I don't know how much I know the science and that's correct, but I don't know if there's
Yeah.
method in the madness. That's just in my head, that's how it makes sense. So that's what I
Yeah,
did.
yeah. Sure.
And yeah, like touch wood, since I've changed to that, I've been 100%.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Sal says, do you prefer a humid chamber versus dry in your incubator? There's a big thing
So
for
I,
combos.
my incubator sits about 80% itself, and then inside of the actual containers is about 95%, if that answers your question. But for smaller monitor eggs and Australian monitors, I like suspension. So I put them in a sim container and suspend them over water or wet medium. But for bigger monitor eggs, I prefer sitting them in perlite. I don't like vermiculite. I find vermiculite too wet and too claggy. I like the dryness of perlite. And the longevity of perlite, I find vermiculite dries out. So when you're incubating an egg for 180 plus days, I don't want to be playing with the medium because there's so much that can go wrong. So
Yeah.
that's why I either want to suspend or do perlite because it's the longevity of perlite is it's going to hold that humidity longer than what vermiculite would. You snake guys at 60 days, you don't know what struggling is, you
Not
know?
even
So
60. I was gonna
that's
say,
what I
like
mean.
Royals, it's like I did the Royals, I don't even know what the humidity in the incubator ever was. Like I had shoe boxes, it was half and half weight to water, again with vermiculite. Pop the eggs in there, make sure the temperature is between, I don't know, anywhere between 83 and 91 degrees Fahrenheit when they hatch in 55 days. You don't have to do anything. It's that easy.
Yeah, so what you're getting there, Sal, is so long story short, the hotter you incubate, the shorter the incubation time. The more humid you incubate, the longer the humidity, the longer the incubation time. So if you're incubating hotter and drier, you get shorter. If you're incubating cooler and wetter, you'll get longer. And the ideal is to meet in the middle. That's the ideal. So again, the drier you are and the hotter you are, the quicker the babies will hatch. But for me, I would much rather a longer incubation because I want bigger, healthier babies. For example, squid that's just hatched was
Oh,
3 grams
hun.
heavier
That's
than sole, but they're clutch mates and they were do the maths, Paul, 7, 8 days apart, but there was like a big difference involved with it. So
and there you go.
yeah,
That is
there you go. That's
squid
squid, yeah.
that I stole from Discord earlier. But yeah, absolutely stunning, stunning little lizards.
Yeah, I think as well, like with incubation, like if you find something that works for you, then just don't change. Like there's a million and one ways to incubate eggs. And if you find something that works, then just don't change. Obviously, it's good to explore and see if you can get bigger, healthier babies. But when I first started breeding piranhas,
I was very much reaching out to people that bred them, and everyone's like, "I'll do this." And I found there were so many different ways of doing it. So I had four different tubs with four different mediums, and I tried four different methods. Dad says you need to clean your nails. What's wrong with my nails?
It might have been from the video I squared earlier.
Oh, I was probably because I was digging in the dirt. But yeah, you can incubate them in so many different ways. And for me, when I got from my first clutch Gill and I was really nervous to do a whole clutch in a sim container. Because I'd never done Gill and I in a sim container. But Ackies have been 100, more or less 100%. Obviously, you have to expect some not to hatch.
Yeah, but there's always going to be a few that don't go or that fall.
Yeah. But touch wood, I've only ever had two Gill and I eggs go bad, and I've had 35, 34 to date. With more probably due to be laid in the next couple of days.
Yeah,
so, yeah, I've touched wood. Sims have served me really well, but with the mangroves, because people are not really willing to share their knowledge, I really struggled to crack it, and it took me seven clutches to sort of figure it out. And it was just doing something on a curveball by burying the egg.
It's something that I wouldn't have even like wanted to experiment with, because to be fair, talking to you now, I had no idea there was that much involved in incubating eggs. Because I don't have that much knowledge, I've done leopard geckos, beardies, royals, corn snakes. I think that's it. There might be one more, I can't remember, but they're all pretty much exactly the same. The time frames aren't that much different. The temperatures, again, aren't that much different. There's not anything really I have to play with. It's sort of all set in stone. And if you don't know, you Google it, and the information is there, and you can pick one of 30 different ways, and they always work.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's like the pressures in the incubator and having the external humidity as opposed to the humidity in the tub is something that hasn't even ever crossed my mind.
I've had eggs pop before when I first started breeding, because, like you say, they're pressure chambers, and if you pop the lid, especially too fast, the eggs just explode. And I've had that with Ackies. There's a video, if you go way back on my Instagram, I'm not expecting you to do it now because it's way back.
My laptop will die if I do that.
There's like a translucent Ackie that had burst the eggshell, just went, and the Ackie was alive, and it was 80 days old, maybe. So it was like a translucent Ackie. It was cool to see, but obviously really sad, and it was my error. And ever since that day, I don't open the lids anymore. Good eggs hatch, and that is what it is, you know.
I never used open the tubs at all. Serenity says, I've only hatched crested geckos, just stick them in the hatch media and leave them on a shelf. Oh, that's the other one that I've hatched, cresties. I don't do anything with cresties. In fact, I've removed my male because I was just walking past the cresty enclosure and there'd be baby cresties in there. I wouldn't even do anything, and I couldn't stop them. So the male has now gone, but I'm still finding babies. What's Michael saying? I prefer perlite over suspended.
Yeah, I do, as regards to longer. Again, for me, suspended with Ackies has worked, so I don't change it. But I also have a big incubator, so there's a lot less variable temperature in my incubator because my incubator is big.
Yeah. Yeah. Sal is saying, just an opinion, iLive by a lab grade collaborated thermometer.
Yeah, I just have a cheap one.
Yeah, I just used like a Govi, I think it was.
Yeah, I just have an ant. I shouldn't really, considering the cargo I have in my incubator, I should probably have like a fancy, like a microclimate or like a proper digital habitat one or something. But I have just a cheapy, like £30 digital one from Amazon. And
yeah, if it works, it works.
It's not broken on me yet.
So, yeah, that's mad. Right. So that's what I wanted to touch on regarding monitors. Congratulations, obviously. It's awesome. If you guys want to go and see more of Paul's monitors, go and check out Paul's monitors on Instagram, obviously. There's a link down below. So the second part of the sort of structure of today, Paul, is the Q&A. Yeah. So all week I've been asking for people to ask questions on Instagram and on Discord and various places. And I've got loads of questions lined up. Some of them are directed at you. Some of them are directed at me. Some of them we can both answer. And obviously, guys, if you're listening, chuck some questions in the comments as well, and I'll try and get through all of them. Humans count, that's 9 months incubation. Okay, yeah, I haven't done humans. Right, so let's find the questions. We'll start with Gary's because it's right in front of me there. Gary says, what is a site we can go to get research papers? I have no idea.
The honest answer, Gary, is off the top of my head, I don't know, but I do know. So if you message me, I can get them to you. But off the top of my head, to get proper research scientific papers, I normally ask people that work in zoos and then they send me links. That's normally what I do because I have friends that work in zoos. I also do a lot of iNaturalist and sort of just examine the natural terrain of the animal that I'm trying to get, because I find a lot of research papers are old hat, and as much as they are good knowledge, a lot of the modern methods of keeping don't necessarily stand up. Again, depending on the species, but for example, me with Varanus indicus, a lot of the research papers aren't kind of what I'm looking for. So I just sort of adapt and change on the fly when it comes to my captive husbandry.
There we go. Right. So, there we go. Right. I haven't made a note of who's asked the questions because there wasn't enough space to fit it all in. But the first question is a lighting one, Paul. So I'm going to aim it at you. What is the best way to set up your UVB LED and halogen? It wasn't species specific. So I don't know if that's okay. Something you can do as a whole.
No, that's fine. So in an ideal world, every single one of your captive herptiles should be under LED, UVB and halogens. It's again old hat to put a halogen one end of the enclosure and the UVB the other side. We're trying to create a little patch of sunlight. And again, because most people keep in smaller enclosures, they cram the halogen all the way over to one side, so you get that heat gradient. Now, in an ideal world, you want the halogen centered or a third of the UVB, the UVB being as long as the animal that you're trying to cover. So if you have a 3 foot lizard, 3 foot UVB. If you have a snake that can coil up into a circumference of 30 centimeters, then you only need a 30 centimeter UVB. But the halogen should be roughly a third in or halfway in, because the UVI is the weakest at the edge. And if you haven't got a solar meter, you have no way to physically check that kind of UV index that your animal is getting. So you have to go by the recommendations on the back of the box. So halogen in the middle, roughly. But you want it doesn't matter if it's back or in front, but you want halogen, then so halogen in front of it, UVB, behind it, LED, or vice versa. Now, the LED wants to cover 2/3 of the enclosure. So if you have a 4 foot enclosure, you want at least a 2.5 to 3 foot LED. So you are getting a gradient of lux. But everything, UVI, infrared A, infrared B, UVA, UVB, is all designed to go to the basking spot. So halogen, LED, UVB, slowly drops off with the UVI gradient being smaller than your lux gradient, if that answers the question.
I think that answers the question nicely. the next one, I think, unfortunately, this is going to be one that I can answer. What is the hope plan for the next year of the podcast? I suppose you can answer it for your podcast as well. I'll go first because you've answered that question. So the hope and plan for the podcast for the next year is pretty much carry on doing what I'm doing. There'll be more vlogs coming because apparently I'm going to start becoming a YouTuber, kind of, but I don't want to, but I like making videos, so it's going to happen. That's about it, really. I've got a few guests that I'm trying to get on that are proving more difficult than I would like them to be. And I don't want to say any names yet because I don't want to get people's hopes up and then nothing happen. But yeah, just another year of the same. Some more ridiculous stuff around Christmas probably, but I'm never doing the 12 pods of Christmas ever again because it was far too much admin, but I will do something like that. But yeah, just more of the same, I guess. What about yours, Paul?
I need to start it again first. I've only done like 2 episodes this year, but I've had a bit of a chaotic year for people that follow me closely, they'll know. But yeah, I don't really have any plans for mine, mate. I just enjoy talking about reptiles. So that's, you know, if I can talk to someone about reptiles, make friends, and if one person can take a little bit of knowledge from that podcast and or escape reality for a couple of, because my podcasts normally go on for 3 to 5 hours. So if people can escape reality for a little bit, then yeah, that's all I really want from my podcast.
I do like your podcast. Your podcast, but like you say, they do go on for a long time. I think the best thing for me when I'm listening to your podcast is YouTube Premium, and I can listen to them whilst I'm at work, because I can't sit there and do the whole live in one sitting because I'll fall asleep. Not that they're boring, they're just they're on quite late and they go on for a long time.
Yeah, they start at 8 and they normally finish around sort of 11, 12.
Yeah, there's one from Sal for you there. Paul, are you up for a collection tour collab?
Does that mean you want to come to my house?
I don't know. He might want to go. He might be inviting you to his house. Michael said it's probably going to cost you a green tea.
Wait, can you elaborate, mate? Do you want me to come to yours or you come to mine?
There we go. Slight Tinder. Whilst we're waiting for ourselves to come up with some elaboration on that, this is one that I was thinking about because I've obviously seen the questions already. So what's your top five monitors that you could realistically own? So
what, that I don't already?
I don't know. I didn't ask them to elaborate anymore. So realistically, the ones I've got, I can't keep anymore. Maybe a tree monitor if I squeeze it in. But I haven't got room for anything else. So I think, what's the top... Let's redo the question as, what's the top five monitors that you've either... Like, what are your top five monitors that are obtainable? You can have them already, or they could be something you've had or something you want in the future. But we're not talking Komodos.
Okay. If I could own any five monitors in the room that I have, it would be, in no particular order, green tree monitors, which I have, black tree monitors, which I have, Varana spinulosis, which aren't in the UK, which is a Solomon Island spiny neck, Varanus varus, which is a lace monitor, and probably Varanus. I'm thinking of one that I don't have. Probably. Oh no. Forget Varus. Let's have Varanus similis and Varanus scolaris, which are the spotted tree goanna, but it's all datura, it's not a tree monitor. And the, I don't know the common name on similis. They're basically just goth ackies.
Nice. I like it. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I can honestly answer that one. I don't know enough about them. Like, the only one that's up, like, the top of the list at the moment that is sort of obtainable, but it probably isn't for anytime soon, is a tree monitor. Again, I don't know which one I want. I just like the idea of them. I don't know if that's just because there's a lot of talk about them at the moment and people are getting them and I feel left out, but it makes a difference to me because I haven't got the space, money or time to do it at the moment. But saying that, when I have interacted with them, the only time being at yours, interacting with Kermit and Raven, it's really cool.
they're different, mate. They're the best. You can't get a better monitor than a true monitor.
No. So maybe in the future, but I don't honestly know. Let me see in the comments what's going on quickly. Sal said, me to pop over to yours.
Not anytime soon, because I've got a lot going on. But once I've sorted a few personal family matters out, so probably in the next couple of months, yeah, we can sort it out.
There you go. That'd be a good video, to be fair. I'd quite like to see that. Even though I've seen the room and I don't need the tour, but I think Sal's content is good content. Next question. Right, this is one that I read and I went, oh, I don't know, I've never even thought about that. So when you go on holiday, who cares for your animals?
What's a holiday?
Exactly, I have no idea. So I haven't been on holiday. I can't even remember the last time I went on holiday. And if I have, it's been me go away for a weekend and like my wife stay at home. I don't know what we'd do if we were to like say go away for a week somewhere abroad. which is like generally a holiday. So if you were to go on holiday, so you're going to Benidorm for a week and Fee's coming with you, who's looking after the animals, or how are you having the animals cared for?
I will answer the question, but I can't go away for a week because there is no one that can look after my collection local enough to do it. When me and Fee go away for weekends, my mum pops in, who lives 10 minutes down the road. But for example, if Mango's light bulb blew, I'm not asking my mum to change them.
No. Why? So, right. Mum, get the tongs on the side. You've got to get her in the holding cell, pen, Fee, yeah. Whatever.
She, mum's pretty good, bless her. She don't mind them. She'll go in there and do whatever, but, you know, it's not.
Yeah.
Lizards like Mango. And again, if something gets out, like, for example, let's say she went in to give Raven water and Raven run out and lost her. You know, I'm going to be really annoyed. It's not my mum's fault, but yeah. I am going to be annoyed. And then two, my mum's never going to forgive herself. So I don't want to put that pressure on anybody. I even, like, sometimes if I've had a long day and I need to do stuff, Fee will do a lot for me. But again, I'm like, don't worry about this one, don't worry about that one, because I know what those animals are like and I know I can deal with them and I know I'm prepared for them. Again, it's not like you snake lot. It's just throw some water in and forget them for 2 weeks. It's not it's not that easy. So no, I don't. I'm going away for the weekend for AHH.
Yeah.
So I'll be away all of Saturday, all of Sunday. So it's only 2 days. But even then, it's like, right, make sure all the waters are done, make sure people are fed before, make sure that, you know. So, and Fia will be at home, but it's still a massive stress for me.
Michael says he'll pay for his flights, he'll come and stay for you.
Yeah. But
I know what you mean. So, I've got a friend of mine lives literally like a 2-minute walk from my house, and he keeps a Beardy and some Cresties. And if I had to go away for a week, I could give him basic instructions on what to do, but I'd still be very wary, and I wouldn't want to put that sort of pressure on him either. Like, I go away with Tough Mudder probably 3 times a year for like 2 days over a weekend. So I'll go away for the Friday and the Saturday night, and I can say to Vicky, like, throw some crickets in, or if the water needs doing, do the water. But I wouldn't want her to do anything else, much like you say. Like, I don't want her to get bitten by anything. I don't want anything to escape. There's too many things that could go wrong. So reptiles have basically made me never want to go on holiday.
Yeah, I mean, when you get to the kind of levels that I'm sure other people, but I'm just going to speak for myself.
Because
again, I don't know anybody else's personal situations. But when you get to the levels that I'm at and what I keep and what I do, you have to sacrifice a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy. That you don't, this isn't easy. It really is a labor of love. Like it's a lot of hours that go into this room, and you have to breathe it, because if you don't, you'll fall out of love with it really quick. And reptile burnout's massive. We see it happen all the time. People buy and buy and buy and buy and buy, and then they end up getting burnt out. And you know, it's happened to me 2 or 3 times. It's like you can lead a horse to water. I can tell a newbie that you're going to do this, you're going to do that. You're going to start with this, you're going to buy this, you're going to end up here, you're going to end up with 1,000 animals, and then you're going to end up selling them all and just keep 10. But you can only lead a horse to water. You have to let people make their own mistakes and walk their own path. But if you're serious and you really want to do it, you can't half-ass it. You can't just, I'm just going to go away for a holiday. You know, Fee and I know, well, Fee knows, because she's with a weirdo like me, that's holidays goodbye. Yeah. You know, it just is the reality of it. We've been on a few holidays, we've been a few weekends away, but we've never been like away. It's not, I want to go to Australia. Well, I am going to go to Australia in 2026. It's not, I will be going to Australia to go out with Frizee and Luke and go herping. Yeah. And I'll probably be going for 2 weeks. So God knows what I'm going to do with the reptiles.
I'm not that far away.
Pop in every day for about 3 hours. That's how long it takes me at least.
Yeah,
every day
I might as well just move in.
That's what I mean.
I don't think that'd go down well at this end.
Fee won't be going with me to Australia, so Fee will be here. So, but again, it's that same responsibility level. So.
No, I get that. Yeah. It's weird as well because I've got dogs as well, and like, I think the dogs come into the holidays thing more than the reptiles do for me. Like, I could get someone to come and do the waters and chuck a few crickets in, but I can't put my dogs in kennels. Like, don't get me wrong, it could be the nicest kennel in the world, but I would spend the entire week going, my dog thinks I've abandoned it forever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So it's a, that is a difficult one. Sal said it's also very difficult to trust an individual with your love, which, yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to put that pressure on someone.
No. But a nice question. It was something that I hadn't even thought of when I saw it. I was like, oh, yeah.
It's the same like when you, like, for example, let's say, God forbid, I would die tomorrow. What happens to all the animals?
Yeah.
Fee knows true. That she just offers them all up to Matt, and then Matt can divvy them between all the friends.
Yeah.
So that's,
I like Raven, much... Matt.
That's my, I think Matt would have Raven, to be fair. But Matt gets basically my entire collection. He gains custody of my entire collection. And then he can do what he sees fit with it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to get rid of this question for a second. It's definitely something that I was listening to a podcast. I think it was Animals at Home podcast with Chris, who I had on last episode. And one of his friends passed away, and he inherited a hell of a load of animals. And they weren't little as well. Like, he had retics and all sorts come in. And it's something that definitely needs thinking about. It's not something I've ever thought about. But again, mine aren't, there's not a huge collection, and they're not massive. So it'd probably be all right. Next question. In your opinion, is there an ethical way to make a living as a reptile breeder, or does the goal of making money automatically corrupt the ethical keeping of reptiles? I think that's aimed at both of us.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, why not? Yes, I think there is an ethical way to make a living as a reptile breeder, but I also think it's very easy to teeter over the edge, and things will start to slide as you rely more and more on the money. So I think if you are a part-time reptile breeder and you're not relying on that income, then your standards will probably be a bit higher. Don't get me wrong, I'm not tiring everyone with the same brush, and I don't know, it's just my opinion. But I feel like if you're relying solely on the reptiles making babies for your roof over your head, the food in your belly, I think they're will become a point where the ethics are not as important in certain aspects. So like royals, I'm going to use an example because that's where I have the experience. Animals get power fed, so they get bigger quicker, so they breed quicker. They're bred at really young ages. There's a lot of things that don't need that. Well, they're kept in racks, for example. It always comes back around to racks, but there's a lot of things, yeah, that if... I think I'm going around in circles now, but yeah, I don't know. In my opinion, is there an ethical way to make a living as a reptile breeder? Yes, but I also think the goal of making money will corrupt quite a lot of people if it's relied upon, I guess, is my answer.
No, I don't think the ideology of money corrupts it, because at the end of the day, in order to have animals, there has to be breeders.
Yeah.
Now, those breeders, some are going to be more ethical than others, and some will be more ethical than others due to passion, and others will be less ethical due to financial incentive. Like Michael said in the comments, it does, like, for me to cover my wage as an electrician, I've got to breed a lot of Gilani.
Yeah.
And to have that many Gilani, I need a lot of space. But you're limited to space. So everything ends up in smaller enclosures because you need to get those numbers up. So then, okay, let me look into more expensive species. Okay, let's go to the tree monitors, because you still have to work with stuff you're passionate with. Otherwise, it is just a money grab if you're not passionate about the species you keep. So, okay, let's go for yellow trees. They're the most expensive tree monitors. Let me breed them. Oh, Jesus Christ, this female's clutch didn't hatch. Or Jesus Christ, she only laid 2 eggs or whatever. Now what can I do to get that money back? I need that money. So it can be done. It's incredibly hard. I would like to think I'm an incredibly ethical breeder. It's not my full-time stick. I don't make much money from this, but every one of my babies goes into naturalistic enclosures. They're all raised under UVB, LED, and halogens. There's no compromise on that. You know, they're all fed, well gut-loaded, well supplemented foods. They're fed regularly. There's no you know, there is no leeway with what I'm trying to produce. If I'm unhappy with anything, it won't be sold. But also I have a full-time job, so I can't sit on the fence and say, yeah, it's easy for me, because I'm fully aware that I'm talking from a place of privilege. My animals don't have to work because I work, so they don't have to, as Fraser would say. But I think you can do it. I think you need a big nest egg so you don't get a bit itchy if something doesn't hatch or if something fails. But I do think if you make animals your full-time 100% gig, I think you've got to be cut from a different cloth, otherwise it does become a chore and a job.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's basically what Sal's just said there as well. He said when it solely pays your bills, it kills your passion, in his opinion. I would agree. So it's not reptiles, but I used to be really passionate about photography. I used to love wildlife photography. I used to go out every day and take loads of photos of wildlife. I've had exhibitions locally. Like, it was good. And I was, don't blow my own trumpet, but I was good at it. And I was like, you know what? I love taking photos. And I start doing wedding photography. And I did wedding photography every weekend for 3 years, pretty much, almost every weekend. And after that, I sold all my camera gear and I haven't touched up the camera since. And it ruined taking photos for me. And I don't do it anymore. And it completely stripped the passion away.
I think that's different in a sense, though, because that's like me. I love reptiles, so let me start breeding dogs.
Yeah, I suppose in a way.
So you weren't doing your true passion, because photography wasn't the passion. It was animal photography or wildlife photography. I get your point. And statistically speaking, I think it's like 85% of people, if you get them to play a game, they really enjoy it. You then pay them to play the game and do well. There's too much pressure and they don't enjoy it. And then it goes down to only like 10% of people enjoy it. So as soon as you add that financial incentive there, it does become a chore and you almost feel like, oh my God, it's a job.
Yeah.
So I see what you're saying, but I think it's easy to get away. I think a lot of people very quickly would be like, I don't even want to get into it. I'm going to touch on it because it's the point I want to make, but I'm not even interested in it anymore. But you start getting into morphs because that's where the money is, and you just become part of a pyramid scheme, and you're no longer being a small batch breeder to supply to someone that's getting their first reptile or someone that's always wanted an Aki monitor. You're producing the next bloody het, whatever you want to call it, whether that's a crested gecko, leopard gecko, royal python, whatever, and you're selling to people to sell to people that sell to people that are selling to people to just breed to sell to people to sell to. And no, they're not pets, they're commodities and they're collectibles. And once you start getting into those morphs, you have to do that to get the money, because you can breed a royal and get 30, 40, 50, 100 grand for a stupid paint. It's exactly the same snake.
Yeah, now, no, I really agree.
I don't disagree with that. If that's what you want to do, great. More power to you. But for me, I find that incredible. The second you start touching morphs, for me, you're becoming unethical, even if you're doing it ethically, because you're just making handbags at that point. You're making shoes. You're putting like a Nike tick on it or a Gucci on it, and that's it. You're selling a brand. You're no longer selling a X species. Now, I know a couple of people who are incredibly passionate, and they work with, for example, let's just say fat-tailed geckos. They're working with just fat-tailed geckos, and they're working with morphs, but they're keeping them naturalistic and they're keeping them great and they're doing an amazing job, but they're not doing the wild types, because if they were, they wouldn't be able to breed them and sell the babies, because the hobby commands the next best thing. And that's why I kind of like the Varanids, because they're untouched outside of like leucistic kingorum and salvators, the water monitors, the bloody morphs being thrown into them. But again, I don't like salvators, and I've been open that I don't. So,
yeah, to be fair, it's something that you mentioned. I don't know if it was on a podcast with me or we were just chatting, but since like making the decision to get rid of the royals, and obviously you're talking about the pyramid scheme and things like that, I've found that any time that I see something where it's like a morph now, it's almost like an instant turn off, and I find that I'm actually more like attracted, for want of a better word, to like the wild types and then the more naturalistic things. One morph that I was gonna, I know you, like you said, you're not a morph, don't do it for you. What about albinism? Because that's something that gets thrown up quite a lot just naturally.
I like melanism.
Okay.
So melanistic animals I'm drawn to. I love melanistic
which are
animals.
The black ones, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So albinism is fine. Yeah. I personally don't like albinism.
Yeah.
But melanism, like melanistic, I adore melanistic animals. Like we have melanistic common lizards not far from me. And I just get all melanistic adders. We have those too. I get so excited when I see them. And I think that's okay. Because it literally is just one genetic trait that can crop up in the wild.
Yeah.
And again, as a spiritual person, I believe the universe created everything perfectly to evolve into its ecological niche where it can fulfill its environmental tendencies and evolutionary traits perfectly.
Yeah.
The second you make it bright red with pinstripes on it. What?
Yeah. Like, no, I got you. I got you. That makes perfect sense.
The word albinism in the wild doesn't tend to survive. Whereas melanism in the wild does. They tend to do better.
Yeah. And they look cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Next question. Let's move on. So, where are we? That one. What is your favourite thing about setting up a new enclosure? Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first on this one?
I can go first. For me, it's researching the animal, understanding how it's going to utilize its environment, understanding what evolutionary traits it's got and what it's expecting to do in captivity, i.e. climb, dig, swim, whatever the case may be. Now, if I've seen a picture of the animal on a branch like this above water, I'll set that up. And the second I see my captive do that, I'm like, yeah, I've done it. I've fulfilled what that animal has evolved to do. I'm happy with that. And that's what I love about creating enclosures.
Yeah, I think that's very similar to me. Like, I love the building of it itself. So not the outside vivarium, but like the 3D backgrounds that I've been making recently, and just setting up that, trying to make a slice of where they would live naturally in my living room or wherever. If I can step back and look at it and go, that looks like what I had imagined, and then you introduce the animal, and like you say, it uses the basking spots like it's supposed to, it climbs where you're expecting it to climb, all of that is just, I think I absolutely love that. Like, doing vivariums, like setting them up, is one of my favorite parts of the hobby. Nice short and sweet one, that one. Next one. Do you have any tips on how best to start a reptile based YouTube channel?
Yeah, just post.
Yeah, consistency.
Yeah, my first videos are terrible. The videos I post now are slightly less terrible. The videos I'm going to post for the next year are going to be terrible. And I just hope in 5 years' time that they're going to be pretty good. Post. Get out your own way. That's the problem. You are your biggest enemy. Because if you started posting today because you want to post, you'll be where you want to be this time next year. But if you just pluck up the courage this time next year, you've lost that year's worth of growth.
Yeah. I think another tip that I would add is don't chase the numbers either. So when I was younger, I did like a fishing YouTube channel with a friend of mine. And we were always, if you know fishing, you know Carl and Alex, who are probably the biggest fishing channel in the UK, I guess. And they're local to me as well. I'm actually quite good friends with Carl. And we were always trying to be like, not the next Carl and Alex, but on par with them. And we were always chasing the numbers. Like, we'd go out fishing and like we go fishing, not with a plan of going fishing, but with a plan of making a video. And then we get back and be like, oh, it got 40 views. Oh, it got 100 views. And we weren't caring. It sort of removed the fun from the whole process, but from the fishing, making the videos, all of that. So I think my best tip would be don't chase the numbers, just enjoy what you're doing. And if people like your content, they're going to watch your content regardless of anything else.
Just be authentic as well, because it's incredibly hard. It's incredibly hard to build a fan base on if you're not being real.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I'll be honest, like I've sat and thought a lot, probably too much, on why I've become so successful on Instagram. And every time I think about it, I come down to three main points. One, I have incredibly sexy lizards. That probably is the number one driver. Two,
the hair.
The hair. But I give a incredibly authentic side to the hobby that most people don't show. And I give that a lot of attention and love. So I basically, I fulfill a demographic that other people don't. So I've got my, but I don't do it for any other reason. I'm just being myself, and I happen to fill it.
Yeah.
And three, I'm unapologetically myself.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think that's what sort of drew me to you and your channel in the first place. Is like watching your content just through Instagram to start with. I felt like I knew you before I'd even had a conversation with you, because you are very open. You say it as it is. I think that's one of the reasons that, like you say, you are so successful, is because you are so open and just yourself. Next question is, we've done that one. Yeah, that one. Reptiles as feeders. Is it completely unethical, or is it acceptable for only animals with obligate diets such as vine snakes or king cobras, or is it acceptable to use as part of a varied diet, for example, monitors?
Would you like to take this one?
Yes. This is my opinion, and I don't use reptiles as feeders. I've got nothing that needs reptiles as feeders. But in my opinion, if you are breeding like locusts or crickets, or you're breeding, for example, mourning geckos or some other small type of gecko, I guess, like, I don't, can't think of another one to my head, but so mourning geckos are locusts. If you're breeding them for the sole purpose of them being feeders, in my opinion, it's not unethical, providing that the animals you're feeding them to would eat them naturally. You know what I mean? So, like, if you've got a beardie, for example, and you're feeding it mourning geckos because it's cool, unethical. If you've got something that lives where mourning geckos live, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I don't know. A vine snake. I don't know if they live in the same place. And they eat lizards as part of their natural diet. I don't see a problem with it. But if the animal's suffering, so like if you've got, I'm going to use mourning geckos because that's what's in my head. If you're feeding it a mourning gecko and you know that it's not going to be able to eat it quickly, it won't kill it in one go. Like, there's many things where that animal is suffering. I think it then becomes unethical. It's very difficult for me to explain what I mean. But I think a locust is a living thing. A mourning gecko is a living thing. I don't separate them into insects, reptiles. You know what I mean? Like, a feeder is a feeder. The same way as if I had a pet sheep, I would still eat a lamb chop. If you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
So, yeah, I think that's where I'm at.
I've got no issue with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What about animals that would eat geckos in the wild but can live their entire life in captivity, healthy?
I was going to rebuttal your point. Yeah, so, for example, bearded dragons in the wild would eat lizards.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't feed a bearded dragon a mourning gecko just because they're not from the same ecological niche?
I don't know. To be honest, it's not something that I've thought of.
Because feeding it to a vine snake or feeding it to a bearded dragon is the same for the mourning gecko. It's the same ethically.
Yeah.
And both of the animals depends on it a lot more. But both of the animals would eat lizards. The mourning gecko is going to die regardless. Yeah. So how is that okay to feed it to one over the other?
Okay, maybe beardies was wrong. But so my understanding was that beardies wouldn't eat lizards. So I was going with
if they could eat lizards, do you not think it's good to mix up for a bit of enrichment?
Oh, yeah.
Because the animal is going to die regardless. You're feeding that animal, that mourning gecko, off regardless. Doesn't matter if you're feeding it to a frog, doesn't matter if you're feeding it to a lizard, doesn't matter if you're feeding it to a monitor, doesn't matter if you're feeding it to a snake, doesn't matter if you're feeding it to a tarantula. It's going to die.
True.
I understand some animals are going to kill it a lot quicker than others. But, for example, hognose, they're frog eaters, they're frog specialists. Yeah. They also use their rear fang to puncture the frogs so they can swallow them whole and also sort of not paralyze them, but immobilize them to a degree. So feeding a live frog to a hognose is incredibly unethical, but that is how they've evolved to eat them.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And to be honest, I don't know. I'm stumped. That's a good. I don't know. It's not something, like I said, it's not something I thought about. Go on. What's your opinion on it?
Well, if we're mass slaughtering chickens, cows, pigs yeah. at like horrendous conditions, what difference does it make if I feed my lizard a baby ackee now and then?
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
And I think anybody who eats meat, or anybody that isn't a complete vegan, that has an issue with reptiles eating reptiles, needs to get off the high horse, because you're an effing hypocrite.
That's my opinion. It's not, to be honest, it's not something, like I said, it's not something that I've put a lot of thought into, but yeah, I don't know. It makes sense. I'm going to eat a cow. There's no reason why something else can't eat a lizard.
I get the suffering. I understand that. And I don't enjoy live feeding full stop, purely because I don't like watching an animal die in the setting of it can't escape.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I used to hunt a lot as a kid. I've killed many of animals. I don't do it anymore. I choose not to do it anymore, but I used to, basically my opinion on meat full stop is, if you couldn't kill it yourself, you shouldn't eat meat. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
And I think the same for your reptiles. If it grates me that people are petrified of bugs but keep lizards, that's a pet peeve of mine.
I agree.
So if your animal would benefit from being fed a reptile but you couldn't do that, I don't think you're wrong for doing that, but that's what, again, a lot of animals can survive mainly on insect diets, but stuff like vine snakes and people or hog noses, people convert them over to rodents. They haven't evolved to eat rodents. They end up getting fat, and you best feed our hog nose once a week, and your hog noses just get fat because it's evolved to eat frogs. So that's where I don't really like it too much.
Yeah, and a point that Michael says as well is, it's about doing things respectfully. If you're feeding a baby beardy to a monitor and filming it because you think it's cool and you want views, not ethical.
I don't think you should ever film live feeding.
No, I agree. Okay. I stopped. I don't post, apart from like the insects being fed to the monitors. It's weird because you draw the line at the feeder insects, but I think that's because it's normal in the hobby. But when I had the snakes, like, I'd never post any feeding content at all, regardless if they were alive or dead. It just was never, there was no need for it. Everybody knows what it looks like when a snake eats stuff. If you want to go and see it, go and watch Animal Planet.
Yeah, but, I don't think we should. I've done a few ackies to Mango that have been born disabled.
Yeah.
You know, and she just dispatched them really quickly. One of them she decided to play with, and it was horrible.
Yeah.
But how can you predict that?
No, exactly. It's not something that you will, you can't control it. Once it's in there, it's in there. So
I've never filmed, I will never film a live feeding, because I think you're just playing God in that sense. But I also have no issue with live feeding full stop of any sort.
Yeah.
As long as it's done in a controlled setting where ideally the animal has the minimum amount of suffering.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's good. What are people saying in the comments? Dendra does say, I think it's illegal here. This came up on Riddler's podcast not that long ago. It's not illegal in the UK to live feed. It's frowned upon by people, but it's not illegal at all.
Isn't it illegal if you deem that animal to suffer or something like that?
Just to get the exact thing quickly, is it legal to live feed reptiles? Okay, see if my laptop crashes. Under the 1911 Act, it is not illegal to feed live vertebrae to reptiles unless you're causing it unnecessary suffering.
Yeah,
there you go.
So just don't film it.
Don't film it. Yeah. Right. Next question. Hold on.
30 ackies due, and I probably won't be selling hardly any of them. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Right. For people new to the hobby, what is the best way to network with other people in the hobby? Instagram. just get on Instagram and everybody chats to everyone, I reckon. Podcast.
Yeah, like I think naturally you gravitate towards people that you like their content. So, for example, if I created Instagram today, you know, I would go and follow a lot of monitor pages. If I was Paul's Monitors didn't exist, I'd go and follow a lot of monitor pages. And then I would message people, oh my God, I love your stuff. And some people just give you a half hour, oh, cheers, and that's it.
Yeah.
But now I'm on the other side of the coin and I get those messages all the time. Plus, trying to deal with grief, plus trying to deal with my own reptiles, plus trying to be a fiance, plus trying to be a dad. So it's very much like, yeah, cheers, thanks. So just take it with a grain of salt if you think people are being blunt because people are busy. But for the most part, just message people eventually. Like some of my best mates, full stop now, I've made from social media.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Like Dan says, just pester people until they like you. That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. People will eventually like me.
That's what Dan did to us. And then he comes around and makes himself at home, sits on the sofa and makes himself coffee.
And Michael says, just copy whatever Paul does.
Yeah. Everyone else seems to, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, I got called out for naming my Instagram live something that you, whatever you called yours earlier. Didn't even do that on purpose.
Mixed bag live.
Yeah.
Every single live I've ever done.
Yeah, it must just be there in my subconscious. I was like, I don't know what to call it. Oh, that'll do. And then you come out, I was like, damn, I knew I'd seen it somewhere.
I got it sent to me. I'm not going to say by who. Someone said to me, they're like, Ben's copying you. So I dropped in when I was at work. I dropped in purely to go, nice name. And then I left.
Oh, dear. It made me laugh. I was like, I can't believe I've done that. But it's fine. I don't mind.
Again, I don't care. You know, imitation is the highest form of flattery, so it's fine.
Yeah. Right. Next one. If you could go anywhere in the world to see reptiles, where would you go?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Am I guaranteed to see my set species? Or is it what I find?
Yeah, I tell you, you get to go there until you see it, what you're going there to see, and then you can come home again.
Papua New Guinea.
Okay, nice. Is there anything in particular you're going there to see?
Indicus, Jobiensis, Procedus, Spinulosis, Macrae, Salvadori, Bohemii, Beccarii, Brazingeri.
Nice.
So, all the monitors.
Just all the monitors. All the monitors.
Then Australia.
I was thinking about this earlier. Let's see what people in the comments say, and I'll answer mine. So Dendro Dave is saying Costa Rica and Borneo.
We were supposed to go to Borneo, then the goddamn pandemic stopped me and V going.
Oh, that's so annoying.
Yeah.
Australia or Botana?
Botanta.
That's
where Chris Aplin goes.
Okay, nice. Sal says PNG, so I presume Papua New Guinea.
Yeah.
Dream Holiday, Peru, but that's fish rather than reptiles. So I was thinking about this today a lot, and my parents have recently just come back from a four-week animal hunting, not hunting as in shooting, but hunting as in looking for, safari and all sorts of stuff in South Africa and Zimbabwe. And I know it's not reptiles, but they've done the big five. They've been on safari pretty much every day for the last 4 weeks. And they were just sending me pictures every day. And I sat here earlier thinking, because obviously I've seen the questions, I was like, I don't know. I couldn't. The first thing that came to mind was Australia. Because when you think, where are the animals at? It's either Australia or the Amazon. And I honestly don't know, because I love reptiles and I'd like to go and see a lot of reptiles and like watching like Luke and Frizy's stuff, especially like their recent stuff where they're looking for Gill and I and all sorts. The Australian outback looks awesome. And I think if I had to answer, it'd probably be Oz. If it isn't Oz, it would be the Amazon. I'm not even looking for anything in particular. I just want to go and like get in a dodgy hollowed out boat and just see what I see. There's nothing in particular that I'm like, I need to see that. But yeah, I think one of the two. I couldn't tell you which one though.
If I was to go on a holiday to not look for reptiles, I probably would go to Africa.
Yeah.
Or I would love to, we were due to go to Borneo, but again, the world crashed and it got cancelled like three times. So we just got our money back in the end.
Yeah.
But I would love to see orangutans in the wild.
Yeah, that would be really cool. That would be
so
really
if it was
cool.
A non, I mean, I don't know. No, Borneo's doesn't count as, it counts as Indonesia, but it doesn't count as Papua New Guinea. But seeing an orangutan in the wild would be, I reckon I'd cry my eyes out if I saw a wild orangutan.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Actually, I'd tell you where it has just popped into mind that I should have said first off is Madagascar. I've been watching the David Attenborough series about Madagascar recently as well. And I watched, I think, I can't remember who did it. Was it Adam Wickens and Dave Kaufman? They were
and
in
Phil
Madagascar.
Strand and Dion and those lot, yeah.
They were all over there. And every day I was like on Instagram, like, they're holding another cool chameleon. Oh my God, they've seen lemurs. There's just Madagascar, just for the animals, there's so much. Like, not necessarily like the best stuff in the world, and depending on your opinion, but there's so much different
they've
stuff.
They've got
I
such
feel
unique
like.
Species.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
I'd love that. I think, yeah, Madagascar is probably number one, actually, after saying I couldn't decide where to go. Last few, how many questions have we got left? We've got three more questions, unless there's any questions in the comments as well. So, next one, this is definitely one for you. Do non-reptile-specific UVB detectors work as well as reptile-specific ones? Because the non-reptile ones are a lot cheaper. I have no idea. I presume a UVB detector is a solar meter?
Yeah, yeah. The honest answer is I don't know because I've not checked it and I've not asked anyone to check it. So the honest answer is I don't know, but I would assume they'd be the same. But then at the same time, if they were the same, people like Francis Baines, Roman, John, they would use cheapy ones.
Yeah.
Why would you buy an expensive reptile one if they're the same when the experts are using... So the experts wouldn't use the reptile ones if the cheapy ones worked. So my guess would be no. Because I know power density, you can use, and lux meters, you can use cheapy ones because the experts use the cheapy ones.
Yeah.
So my guess would be no, it works differently. The answer is I don't know. But I would assume it doesn't because the experts do use the reptile ones. So okay. That's my guess.
That. Yeah, I have no idea. So that makes sense. This one was worded like this. So whilst I agree with the lighting for wild types, I'm unsure about the effect it can have on the lighter mutations in reptiles such as albinism. Is there any difference? That was what was messaged to me on Instagram. So I think the gist of the question is, do things like albinos get affected by LED UVB halogens different to a normal animal, like a wild type would?
No, because albinism does survive. It can survive in the wild. What kills albinism off in the wild is sticking out like a sore thumb, not the sun. So if you're keeping an animal to the correct parameters, albinism isn't going to be an issue. There are hereditary tendencies for eye issues or skin issues when you start becoming a mad scientist and breed 16 different genetics.
Yeah.
But straight albinism isn't an issue. I would maybe reduce the UVI a little bit. But LEDs, all they are is visible light. That's not going to cause you an issue. So no, I wouldn't have an issue giving an albino animal the same as I give my normal animals. For example, the leucistic kingorums, I know they're not albino, they're leucistic, but it's a similar inherent trait.
Yeah.
They're completely fine, kept the same as the normals. I think the main issue is there's this stigma with, I couldn't tell you what genetic it is, but there are genetics where the eyes, especially in leopard geckos, have issues.
Yeah, I was going to say leopard geckos.
But again, they've been crossed and crossed and crossed and crossed and crossed. They're not. And the problem is with stuff like leopard geckos, there is no such thing as leopard gecko because when they were all originally imported, there were like six different subspecies that were all mixed bred.
Yeah.
And now they're all they weren't six subspecies at the time, but now they're six subspecies. So there is no leopard gecko.
Yeah. So and the ones in captivity are nothing like the ones in the wild.
Yeah, and then there wasn't it something stupid like the Tremper albino. There was only like one or two. So every single Tremper albino is related somehow, somewhere to city stuff like that. So, you know, there's so many different genetics thrown around in it. So in an instance like that, maybe use a shade dweller rather than, for example, a 6%, depending on the species. But if you're using a shade dweller full stop, then I wouldn't worry. I'd go or go luminize and you can reduce the IR, the UVI, sorry.
Yeah.
Anyway, because you can dim the UVI down on luminize.
Yeah, but only if you've got a reptile specific UV solar meter, not the cheapy ones.
Yeah, I think I've got one here for demonstration purposes. But yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's in here somewhere. There it is.
It's something I need to invest in, I think.
Other brands are available.
There you go.
So yeah.
And you literally just push the button and stick it under and it tells you what the UVI index is.
There's currently zero UVI in here.
There we go.
Just like Riddler's enclosures.
He's in the chat at the moment as well.
Yeah, I know, that's what I said. I wouldn't have said it without him being
there. You could have said it without him being there.
We also, now it's nighttime in my room, we have a wild cockroach.
Nice. Oh, yes. I'm still picking up crickets from when all my crickets escaped. They all started chirping now as well. So my wife is a happy, happy person.
All of mine are going now. I can hear them all.
Right. The final question that was submitted, and now I've got one more that I wanted to bring up. And I'm sure what's down in the comments as well. This was really vague. Favorite reptile. So I figured we could do the favorite reptile that you currently keep and then your favorite reptile worldwide, and I will do the same.
You can go first.
My favorite reptile that I currently keep is the Aki that I got from you that has some bent toes. And honestly, I presume he, I don't know, I'm just calling him a he. I love the gill and I love all the reptiles I've got, but that Aki specifically is really bold and he will come out. He doesn't like, he'll take food from my fingers. He's the only one that's bitten me so far as well. And I'm just really drawn to him. So for like an animal's personality specifically, that Aki is my favorite.
What you should do is do your favorite overall reptile, favorite crocodilian, favorite tortoise, turtle, favorite snake, favorite lizard.
Okay, I will do that. All right. So, in which case, what's your favorite animal that you keep first?
And then mango.
We'll go through. There we go. Easy.
Yeah.
Right. So, favorite reptile overall will leave till last. So, favorite turtle/tortoise first. That's, I don't know. I haven't thought about this.
Green sea turtles.
Yeah, I was going to go for a turtle as well. I really like them. They are gorgeous. I'm a massive fan of Fly River turtles. I absolutely love them. And if it was something I could keep, I would have one. But it's not something that realistically I could keep. But I love a Fly River turtle.
I've never seen one in a while, but myself and Fee went to the London Aquarium and we saw two green sea turtles in the aquarium there. And I'd never seen a sea turtle in person before.
Yeah.
And I just cried. How beautiful they were.
They are absolutely stunning. I'm quite lucky. My parents live in Cyprus and they...
I think they're
green sea turtles. They have a lot of turtles that come up on the beach. And a few times, like, you can go and help either collect the eggs or, like, help the little babies when they're hatching. And it's just... It's absolutely incredible. What was that? Riddler's going. Thanks for popping in, Riddler. Definitely my favorite reptiles. Michael saying Aldabras. I do also. I have a big soft spot for massive turtles, tortoises. Like, if I had the space, time, money, I would love to have like a little herd of Socatas or Aldabras or Galapagos tortoises, anything like that.
Oh, Matamatas are sick, to be fair. And I also love common snapping turtles. One day I will have one and keep it in the garden.
Yeah. I like a lot. There's a lot of turtles and tortoises that I really like. I don't think they get a lot of like the love they should get. Like even so, we've got horse fields at home, and they're Vicky's. And when she said she wanted a tortoise, I was like, really? They're boring. They don't do anything. Like they're just shells. I love our tortoises. They've got such mad personalities.
And, yeah, they're great. Yeah,
they're absolutely brilliant. If you don't, obviously, the only downside really is the fact that they live forever. But yeah, I love tortoises. They're absolutely fantastic.
Our tortoise escaped the other day, and I almost crushed him because I didn't realize he escaped. And I was just walking through the house and went to put a foot down. I just felt something there, and I looked down, thankfully, and it was our tortoise.
Oh, blimey. Yours is quite small still as well, isn't it?
Well, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still small, but it's big enough to see, but I wasn't expecting a rogue tortoise to be running around the house.
Yeah. I warn you now, if you get bitten, it really hurts.
Yeah, bit my toe the other day. Yeah,
I got bitten. It was my own fault. I was stroking his front legs, and I wasn't really paying attention to what I was doing, and he bit me and latched on, and oh my God, it hurts so much.
Yeah.
Right, so that is turtle / tortoises. Next one, favorite lizard.
I don't know.
That is a difficult one. There's so many. I think favorite. All right, not of all time, but favorite. Like, because obviously people go through phases. Favorite lizard at the moment.
Probably the Parenti. And it's been for a while. The Parenti just is like the quintessential. Idyllic Varanus, like it's just an athlete. It's gorgeous, the webbing, like, yeah. And again, growing up with Steve Irwin and chasing Parenti, I think Parenti probably is my favorite lizard.
They are gorgeous, absolutely stunning animals. I don't know, right? I love a lizard. I used to be a snake person. I'm at the moment. I tell you what, I'm absolutely loving lizards. They're just snakes are boring. Like, don't get me wrong, I loved the snakes, but
I tried to tell you. But
I know you did tell me. Hey, it worked. I sold everything and started again.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, a lizard that I keep seeing at the moment that I know nothing about other than what it looks like. And I might even get the name wrong, but I think it is a Mexican alligator lizard. I don't know, to be honest. They're like a big scalation.
Yeah, Abronia graminea. Yeah, cloud forest. I used to have a Lifrichella. They're sick.
Yeah, I don't know anything about them apart from what they look like. And I think they're so cool. So at the moment, that's my favorite lizard, and I keep looking at pictures of them on Instagram. But
favorite overall, like a yellow ring around the eyes. Some of them,
that's
a Bronia graminea. Yeah,
yeah, they are really cool. What are people saying in the comments? Michael, we're back on tortoises quickly. I like big tortoises, but the biggest I'd keep be mountain radiated leopards or sort of. Yeah, I'm the same. I don't think anything bigger than like a red foot or a cherry head or maybe a what are they called? Indian star tortoise.
The Burmese browns are quite cool.
Yeah, but I think anything bigger than that, you need like a paddock, and it's hard to heat them as well. Like, they're not easy to keep. We've got favorite monitors. What are favorite lizards people are talking about? So, green trees definitely up there. Dan's saying Bell's face lace. Gender Dave,
he's obsessed with the Niles. A whole conversation podcast. He's just been going Niles.
And Sal Salvador,
croc monitors, man.
Yeah. Favorite crocodilian.
I think it's got to be the saltwater crocodile.
Just for the sheer size of them.
I quite like gharials. And I really like the Cuvier's dwarf caimans.
Yeah, I'm a big
fan of that. Black caiman's pretty cool. Caimans are pretty cool. But again, I think the same reason as the Parenti, just goddamn Steve Irwin. I found out today Steve Irwin and my mum have the same birthday.
Is it not Steve Irwin's birthday today?
No, it's the 22nd.
Oh, okay, I saw something on Instagram. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I it's weird that he keeps coming up. I've been trying to find the Crocodile Hunter series to watch at the moment. And if you go on Amazon or go on Google, it says Amazon has got it. And you go on Amazon Prime.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah, I've started watching it on YouTube, but it's never like HD enough or it doesn't fit the screen quite properly.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Amazon claim they've got all six series, and you go on there and then they've got three episodes of series one, one of episode two, and then nothing until you get like the best of. So if anyone knows where I can watch like all six series of Crocodile Hunter, please send me a link, because that would be great. I'd like to watch that. My favorite, Culver's Dwarf Cayman is the first one that comes to mind. Like, I'm a massive fan of them. I just think they're really cool, and it's a sort of, it's a crocodilian that I know it's an obtainable one that you could in theory keep. I think that's another reason I really like them. I also really like, I'm going to probably butcher the name, I think. Is it Thomas?
Yeah, Thomas Stoma, yeah.
The ones that Crocodiles of the World have got with the really long, thin snouts.
They look like the gharials, but they're not gharials, yeah.
Big fan of those as well. Big fan of those. What we got left? Snakes and... Is it just snakes?
Snakes and then Tuatara's.
Tuatara's. Okay, so favourite snake.
Oh, I don't bloody know. You know, I'm a massive fan of boomslangs.
Oh, okay.
I think they're really cool. And I'm also a massive fan of tiger snakes.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm not a snake kind of guy, but I love snakes. But when people say, "I think your favorite snake," I'm like, oh. And then stuff like, emerald tree boa or something like that. But I'm going to go with a boomslang. I think boomslangs are pretty cool.
Okay. So I think my favorite snake of all time is the eyelash viper. I've liked eyelash vipers since I was like 12 years old. Like, just because they've got eyelashes. Like, their whole face is just really, really cool. I don't really know anything about them apart from what they look like again and that they're called an eyelash viper. But there's something that I'm always really drawn to. Saying that, I'm going to see if I can find a picture. My local reptile shop had a snake that was given to them called a blue rain snake. Rain spelt like R-E-I-G-N.
It's not something.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you mean.
A bit like a rhino rat snake type looking thing.
Sick. I know exactly what they are. Yeah,
it was so cool. I haven't seen one since. Like, I've been trying to find one because I tried to buy it, but one of the girls that works in the shop bought it because it came in as like someone surrendered it.
I haven't
seen them available, but it was such a cool looking snake. Like, it wasn't particularly big, quite sort of like.
If you search rains rat snakes, they'll come up.
Let's have a look.
Because they have a blue phase, but they're green. They're same as I'm forgetting the snake now. There's another snake that's green but has a blue phase. They're a race, some sort of racer.
Oh, like the a range, blue Baron's racer type thing.
That's it, Baron's racer.
Yeah, yeah.
They're the ones I'm after. Rain's rat snake. I've looked at getting them before.
Yeah, I loved it, and they wouldn't sell it to me. I was gutted. Michael says, "Are you going to keep snakes again soonish, Ben?" I don't know. I've got one empty enclosure, and I've thought about it a few times, but I don't know.
What size?
45, 45, 60. So it's a small viv, and it'd have to be something small and arboreal. And I don't know. And frogs could go in there, and I've got a thing for frogs at the moment.
What size snake? I quite like what are they? The ones that are venomous and poisonous. The killed bellies. Are they killed bellies? I think they're killed bellies.
I don't know.
They basically eat poison dart frogs and save as poison dart frogs because of what they eat. It makes them poisonous. So when people are like, snakes are venomous, not poisonous. There's actually a species of snake in the wild that is poisonous.
There's a couple of
the killed bellies.
Yeah, isn't there a type of sea snake that's also poisonous as well?
I'm not sure, but there's killed back. I think it's killed back snakes. They can be venomous and poisonous, which is pretty cool.
Nice, yeah. Cool, well, there you go. That's quite a lot of favourites. I'll tell you what, last favourite frog. And then we will finish with favourites. My favourite, go on. You go first.
Go on.
So, frogs or toads. A frog or toad that I keep seeing at the moment that I am absolutely in love with is the harlequin toads. There's a specific one that I can never remember the name of, but I have got a screenshot of it that I really wanted to keep, and I can't find them, But the information that I did find led me to believe that they're pretty much
impossible to keep. Are they the ones that are pink and black?
Yeah, so purple Harlequin toads.
That's it.
So they look like... I don't know if you can see it with the ring light on. Hang on. Can you see that on the camera?
Just about, yeah.
Atelopus barbatini, if that makes sense. But yeah, they've got like... It's almost like a topography map on them. They're really cool, but if in keeping them in captivity, you have to be able to like recreate. They have to have shallow moving water in the enclosure at all times. Which is just a nightmare.
I'm a big fan of giant Malaysian leaf frogs.
They're the ones with the like horns above their eyes.
Yeah, horned frogs. But yeah. I'm also a fan of giant waxy monkey frogs.
Nice. Yeah.
And I'm also a fan of tiger-striped walking frogs or tiger-legged walking frogs. They're basically red-eyed tree frogs, but with a tiger stripe on their sides.
Okay.
They're cool. I'm quite a big fan of amphibians. I really enjoy amphibians. My room's just too hot for them.
Yeah. So it's not something I've never kept is frogs or amphibians of any type. But with, obviously, the... rearrangements at home, the plan is to hopefully add some later in the year, but I'm holding off because of where the viv placements are. I don't know if they're going to get too hot in the summer around the monitors, so I've got to wait. I don't want to put anything in there and then it just gets cooked in the summer, so I'm going to wait and see. But yeah,
the waxy monkeys, you wouldn't fit well in that, but they're all right because they can tolerate a semi bit of heat.
Yeah,
so they're not too bad. Same as white tree frogs, they can tolerate a bit of heat, but they get big.
Yeah, so I've looked at white tree frogs, red eyes, Amazon milk frogs. The Amazon milk frogs are sort of where I'm at the moment, but I can't make my mind up at the moment. There's so many, and I know that it's quite far. It's like 6-7 months away at least, so I've got plenty of time to make a decision. And I keep going.
I bought a bunch of tadpoles. It was like 100 tadpoles of milk frogs before.
Mm.
Just drove home from like Essex with these tadpoles like sloshing around the car, and I think like 40 of them made it to froglets. It was a pretty cool little reminded me of being a kid again and keeping the frogs born. So it's pretty cool.
That is cool, actually. I like that. That'd be quite a cool way to do it, actually. I'm not sure. Like, my daughter is really excited about frogs. Like, she wants me to get them like yesterday. She's like, everything at the moment is frogs, but it's a long way off. But it'll happen at some point, hopefully. If you can keep a tree monitor alive, you can keep a frog alive. I don't have a tree monitor. I haven't kept one alive yet, so I can't guarantee I can keep a frog alive.
I think, mate, I'll be honest, I've had a few frogs. I've had a few frogs die. I've never had a tree monitor die. I've had a tree monitor escape and live in the wild for 10 days, and it still survived. So I would say tree monitors are hardier than frogs.
Oh, dear.
Maybe not wild caught, but still. I fancy my chances with a tree monitor over a frog.
Right, there was one more thing that I had on my list of stuff that I wanted to talk to you about before we start to wrap up. We briefly mentioned it on Instagram when we were chatting, but Reptile Systems have just brought out the new, I can't remember what they're calling it, but it's a screw-in bulb that is an LED with UVB in it as well. What's the difference, in your opinion, between like the LED UVB and a normal T5 UVB? And are they worth looking into yet, or is it not something we should even be contemplating yet?
To my knowledge, I'm not 1,000,000% clued up on it, but to my knowledge, LED UVB give off incredibly high levels of UVC, which is dangerous.
Okay.
And UV T5 and T8 produce low amounts of UVC to a level where it's where it's not dangerous. But most LED UVBs, and I haven't seen testing on the Reptile Systems, so I'm not saying the Reptile Systems, but most of them, to my knowledge, produce high levels of UVC, which is dangerous, and I've been told by some leading industry people that personally been told that UVB LED is quite a far way off from being where it needs to be. I think Zilla. No, it's not Zilla. Is it Reptech? Ryan McVeigh's brand in America. I think they have a UVB LED bulb that's okay. But I don't know enough about that individual. But I know a lot of them are unsafe. So I think T5 high output at the minute is the best way for the tech here. I think T5 high output at the minute is the best way to go. Obviously, the advantages of LED UVB would be more light. It would be less watts, so it'd be more cost effective.
Yeah.
The longevity would probably be better. That is in a diode.
Yeah, that was something I was going to say. Is it likely to last a lot longer than a normal traditional tube?
Because it would be in a diode rather than to do with the mercury. But I don't think we're going to be there anytime soon.
Right, okay. Fair enough. Gary says it's two UVB light fixtures too much. Should I just have one?
UVB stack. So for an indicus carry, just one, because you only want a UVI of 3 to 4. So if you've got, for example, a 10% bulb, that's going to give you a UVI of 4. If you stick two in there, you are going to get a UVI of 8.
Yeah.
So UVB will stack. So just use one. Use LEDs instead.
There you go. There you go. Right. That is it for questions. Unless anybody in the comments has any more questions, I will give them a few minutes. So apart from any questions that may come up, let me just have a quick run through the comments. I've been trying to keep up to date with them.
How many people have we had in chat?
Max was 22 people, which is massive for this. So I'm well happy with that. Thank you guys all for coming along. We're going to start wrapping it up in a minute once we finish answering the questions. Sal says, what's on your breeding plans? I have no breeding plans.
Since hatching the UK's only captive mangroves, I have found an incredible sense of presence, completion, and absolution. And I have no need, desire, want, will, aspirations, ambitions to chase, strive, anything. I am incredibly, incredibly humbled to be in the position that I am. And I will continue to, but I have a gill and eye that's about to lay eggs anytime soon, any day soon. She's digging now, so I could have eggs in the morning. But I'm not, you know, what's next? It's such an unhealthy mindset to be in, especially because these are animals and we're always chasing the next thing, regardless if it's a morph, regardless if it's a species, regardless if it's a female. We're always chasing something and we're never present and we never enjoy what we have. And as much as I've been trying to preach that since being on social, I very much am at that place now. And I'm actually looking to move on a couple of animals, more than I already have. I recently got some geckos that I've sold that weren't because, that wasn't because I needed to. That's because I've been off work through family matters and needed the money that I spent on them. But my gill and I are breeding. My Aki's breed. Next year, my female green chi will be old enough to breed. Hopefully I've got a really unique yellow mangrove here that's like nothing I've ever seen. Hopefully that's a girl and one day I can breed it to one of the boys. I've got some Stelodactylus, which I think would be quite cool to breed. But mate, I'm just enjoying my keeping. I'm enjoying this 7-year-old me's dreams, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm not in any. 6 months ago, mate, I was trying to climb Everest, like, all the time, for different things. I was trying to be the best at what I'm doing social. I was trying to be the best at how I do. Like, all I need to be is the best that I can be. I don't need to be the best of anything else.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise that until I got these, like, these lessons that life has, you know, these rewards from the lessons that life has been throwing at me. And I'm in no rush. And I actually feel so much better that I have no pressure to chase anything, and I have no need to impress anybody. Not,
Yeah.
I don't, get me wrong, I've never tried to impress anybody ever, but there's always that, oh, I could do that, I could do that, I could do that, oh, yeah. You know, you always want to dance around with the big boys, and one, I've done it, come at me. Two, it's easy to say that now that I've done it, but I posted it on Instagram. I've got myself to the top of this mountain, and there's other peaks. I can see these other peaks. Peachtree Monarchs, never been done in the UK. All right, I could do that. You know, there's so many peaks, and I've looked out
Yeah.
across this horizon at this wrecked up landscape, and I've gone, nah, F it. I'm
Yeah.
staying here. I'm not.
Stick
I
just
don't
stick your
need
flag in at the
that.
top of this
Don't
peak and
do
stay
that
there, like.
again.
Yeah.
I'm just enjoying what I've got, mate. I don't need any more. I don't want any more. I messaged someone today about me having one of my, let's just say, prized possession animals, and it would only go to this person anyway.
Yeah.
Just to free up a bit of time and space so I can be present, so I can work with my little black tree that I've always wanted, so I can work with these captive mangroves that the virgin babies. Like, you know, I'm so blessed to be where I am, and I think I'd be an idiot to go, right, yeah, what's next? And,
Yeah.
you know, for all the work that I've done on myself through my mental health and through all the traumas that I've been through, like, it's all got me to this point of just, like I say, just absolution. I'm like, yeah, I'm happy. That's it. I'm content. I'm done. I
Yeah.
am done.
Like Gary says in that comment, your whole demeanor has changed with the Partho babies. You can see the way you carry it in yourself, your chest puffed out, shoulders relaxed. You exude success. No, you're oozing it. And yeah, I completely agree. Like, obviously we're chatting quite a lot and through seeing in Discord and just the content you're putting up at the moment as well. Since the Partho babies, you're just, it's, yeah, it's like a sense of calm.
Which
And
I didn't know I'd get. Because
yeah.
I don't mind talking about it, because I always do, but like, I tried to take my life maybe 4 years ago now, nearly. And I went to a lot of therapy and I went to a lot of groups, and I was trying to work on myself. And my whole life, I've been chasing something.
Yeah.
And I've never known what that is. And the answer to that something isn't captive bred mangroves. The answer to that something was realizing that I am enough.
Yeah.
And I had to produce these mangroves to sit and reflect, because when Solly hatched, I was very much like, I didn't want to tell a soul. I didn't
Yeah.
want to tell a soul. This was mine. This is important to me. And then I told Patreon, because like the people on Patreon are like my family. They're important to me. I didn't, and that was really weird, because I almost thought I would enjoy the egotistical side that I'm the first in the UK to do it. And people that know me, truly know me, know that I'm not ego driven. Like, my ego died a few years ago. I'm incredibly sarcastic, and I'll make comments that I'm the biggest in the UK and I carry the scene. But people that know me deep at my core know I don't care about any of that.
Yeah.
And because I had this feeling of absolution, I was just like, what is that? And I sat with myself for like 10, 15 days, and I came to this answer, and I was like, I have always been enough, and I've always been good enough, and I've always done my best, regardless if I've been doing terribly. I've always done my best,
Yeah.
and that was enough for me, mate. And I was just like, I had to produce the UK's first to get there. But I think sometimes I it doesn't sound like Paul. I don't know what you're about. But I said it on an Instagram post. A lot of us come into the reptile hobby with traumas or neurodivergency. And we all buy reptiles and cram them in little holes to, like, oh, I've got a problem. Buy a gecko. I've got a problem. Buy a frog. I've got a problem. Buy a snake. But the snake, the gecko, the frog isn't what caused the issues. And we'd have little craters in our lives, and stuffing them full of animals doesn't fill these voids. And we're always going to be striving to do more. My void was not feeling enough. And I'm trying to
Yeah.
fill it with all these animals. I never was going to. But it was only when I zoomed out and looked at my life for what my life is, not for what I've achieved and what I can be, and just looked at it for what it is. And I've just gone, oh, yeah, it's enough. So,
Yeah, that's
yeah.
good. That's good. Nice. Right. I think it is time to wrap up as we've been going for 1 hour and 45 minutes, which is the by far the longest episode I've ever done, but as it's a birthday episode, Why not? It's an extra bumper episode for anyone that's still here listening. So, wrapping up, there's one question left to ask, which is the wrap-up question for the podcast for 2024 that I definitely didn't steal or get the idea from anybody else's podcasts. It's just one that came off the top of my head. So the question for you, Paul, is if you could give 10-year-old... If you could give your 10-year-old self a piece of advice, what would that advice be?
It's going to be really, really hard, but you're going to get through it.
Nice. I like that. And I think that's something that a lot of us can resonate with as well. Nice. So there we go. What an episode, mate. Thank you very much for coming on, answering all the people's questions, and obviously chatting about the captive bred mangroves at the top of the show as well. So before you disappear, where can people find you, mate?
Paul's Manners, Instagram, YouTube. That's it, really.
Sorted. Easy as that. Right, Paul, I'm going to kick you out. I'm going to finish off and don't go anywhere. I'll just have a quick finish off here before we call it. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on, mate. I really appreciate this. And it's been a great episode.
No stress. Everyone like, comment, share, subscribe.
So he knows what he's doing. There we go. So that was Paul's Monitors. Hopefully we answered some of your questions and you guys all enjoyed the chat. Before I finish up, I just want to take a minute to say thank you to each and every one of you that watches and listens, to the podcast. I can't believe I've been doing this for a year, but what I'm more amazed about is that I've made it to a year. When I started, I didn't think I'd hit 10 episodes. I definitely didn't think people would be listening. So all you guys and girls and anybody else, you guys are the reason that I keep coming back week after week, and I'm absolutely loving it. Now the vlogs as well, they've just started doing those, so it's all growing and evolving. So thank you to each and every one of you that listens, watches, comments, likes, subscribes, follows, leaves reviews, DMs me on Instagram, comments and stuff. All of the support means the world to me, and I'm going to keep doing my absolute best to bring you content every other week. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you want to keep up to date with what's going on with me, go and check out Instagram or Facebook. Just search for Raptor Chat and I'm sure I will pop up. As I mentioned at the top of the show, there is a Patreon available. It opens you up to the private Discord where you get early access, extra content, pre-recorded episodes, some merch and some other bits and bobs as well. So that's that. I've been your host, Ben McIntyre. This has been the Raptor Chat podcast. Please don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and I will see you in the next one.